back in the black and back on track. That's Treasurer Josh Frydenberg's take on the latest economic growth figures released ahead of the mid-year budget update in a few weeks' time. Annual growth has ticked up slightly to 1.7%, underpinned by strong exports as well as government spending. Josh Frydenberg says the outcome shows, to quote him, the remarkable resilience of the Australian economy.
Despite the economic headwinds we face with a absolutely devastating drought at home, but also the trade tensions abroad, and at a time when other major economies like the United Kingdom, like Germany, like Singapore and South Korea have all experienced negative economic growth this year, the Australian economy continues to grow at 1.7% is an increase.
That's Treasurer Josh Frydenberg speaking to Lee Sales on 7:30 last night. The opposition, though, says the economy is still barely growing. Jim Chalmers is the Shadow Treasurer. Good morning to you, Jim.
Good morning, Hamish.
Has the economy turned the corner in your view?
Oh, no, I thought the numbers yesterday were pretty troubling, Hamish. We had quarterly growth actually slowed from the June quarter to the September quarter. Annual growth still has a one in front of it, which is well short of what we need to see wages get going again in this country. It's much lower than what it was when the government changed hands. It's much lower than it was when Josh Frydenberg took over as Treasurer, much lower than what it was at the election. So I think there's enough in what we saw yesterday to be very concerning, not just those overall figures about GDP growth, but all the components of that too. So consumption was weak, business investment was weak, the private domestic economy actually went backwards. So I don't think there's many credible economic commentators who would agree with Josh Frydenberg's assessment.
But if we believe what you've been saying for months, that the government simply was not doing enough, was simply not playing its part, then we wouldn't be in this position, would we?
We've been right at every juncture for the last 6 months, Hamish. All of the things that we've been raising concerns about, we saw in yesterday's numbers. We said that consumption will be too weak. We said we've been concerned about business investment. We said that the private economy was in strife, and all of those things have turned out to be true. And all along, the government has said, oh, look, if we sit on our hands, things will pick up. And what we saw yesterday is that things didn't pick up. Scott Morrison actually said, when we got weak figures last quarter, he said that the numbers will pick up this quarter. And that didn't happen. They actually slowed.
How then do you explain the return to growth in the housing market, for example?
Well, there's different components of the housing market. One of the things about prices in the housing market is that that's a feature of remarkably low interest rates. And again, we've been saying for some time that when you leave all of the heavy lifting in the economy to the Reserve Bank and to interest rates, that will puff up asset prices, but not necessarily do enough to boost the economy elsewhere. And that's actually what we're seeing. When it comes to housing, the prices are going up in some of the big markets, but we're not actually seeing a lot of approvals. We're not actually seeing a lot of building. So the housing market itself is a bit of a mixed bag, but it's also those prices that you refer to is because we've got interest rates which are a quarter of what they were during the GFC, but they're not doing enough on their own to boost the rest of the economy.
But as you say, you can't look at these things in isolation, and notwithstanding the details that you've outlined as being the negatives, if you get the housing market rebounding, the current account back in surplus for the first time in 40 years, debt being paid down by some Australians, Australia maintaining its AAA credit rating, and the budget returning to surplus if we believe the forecast next year, things don't look that bad.
I just don't agree with you, Hamish. I mean, even the things that you just identified, household debt is at record highs. Wages are stagnant. Wages are barely keeping up with the cost of living. They're certainly not keeping up with the cost of childcare and electricity and private health insurance. So even that list that you just rattled off, I would contest. If you speak to Australians in the outer suburbs of this country, they know that when they walk through their shopping centres that there's for lease signs everywhere. They know that their wages aren't keeping up with some of those costs that I just identified. The economy is much weaker than it needs to be to get people's living standards up again.
But the Treasurer is making the point, and I'm interested to hear what you think about this, that whether spent or saved, the tax cuts that people are taking and using to pay down their debt may not ultimately be a bad thing, that it does put Australians in a stronger position.
Well, Australians will make their own judgments about the best destination for those tax cuts that we supported in the Parliament. And that's, you know, that's fine.
So you accept what Josh Frydenberg says on
this? No, the point I'm making, Hamish, and the point that all of the credible economic commentators have made about this, not just this week, but for longer than that, is that the tax cuts, even if they are helping a little bit, they're not helping enough. Same with the interest rate cuts. And the point that we've made all along, and more people in the business community, the Reserve Bank, the credible commentators, now share Labor's view that something more needs to be done in the economy to get it going again. We shouldn't accept annual growth with a one in front of it. We shouldn't accept that quarterly growth has to slow. The government has been sitting on its hands, and while the government sits on its hands, the economy has deteriorated since the election.
With respect, I just want to draw you back to that question because I'm trying to understand whether you disagree with Josh Frydenberg's argument. I'll read it to you. He says, whether spent or saved, the tax cuts have helped put households in a stronger economic position, making them more financially secure with more money in their pocket, and this will support the economy. Do you actually disagree with that?
Well, obviously more Australians have more money in their pocket, and that's why we voted for the tax cuts when they came into the parliament. That's self-evident. The point that he's making is that some people are saving and some people are spending. That's also obviously true. The point I'm making is that the tax cuts on their own have not been enough to boost the economy. That's a fact as well.
But if that money does start to flow back into the economy in the near to medium term, then that might in fact put those growth figures on an upwards trajectory further.
Well, we all want to see the economy pick up, Hamish. It remains to be seen whether it will. What we're saying is, and we've been saying it for 6 months now, and now the business community largely agrees with us, the Reserve Bank does, and the commentators do, and the experts and the economists, is that they have not done enough to boost the economy when it comes to those tax cuts and indeed the interest rate cuts and anything else that might be in the system. More needs to be done.
But if your argument is that the tax cuts haven't done what they were supposed to, why argue to bring forward the second round?
Because something additional needs to be done here, Hamish. And it's not just that we've proposed. We've proposed bringing forward additional infrastructure. We've proposed
Just before you move away from the question, why make the argument to bring forward the second wave if the first wave, as you're saying, isn't really working?
Because what's been done so far hasn't been sufficient to get the economy going again.
And is there any evidence that the second wave would?
Well, there's evidence that the more people have to spend in the economy, the better chance that we have of getting consumption up. Consumption yesterday in those numbers was the lowest it's been since the global financial crisis. It barely grew at all. And so what we've done, and we've done it in quite a constructive way, I've done it on your program before in conversations with you, is to say that more needs to be done and here are some ideas. The tax cuts are just one of those ideas. Tax break for business investment. Getting energy policy right, that would get the economy growing again. Infrastructure, a whole range of things that the government should be doing that they're not doing, and we see the price that ordinary Australians are paying for that in the numbers which were released yesterday.
All right, big news out of Canberra really overnight was the repeal of the Medivac bill. Do you think that if the outcome is those refugees in Manus and Nauru or in Papua New Guinea end up in New Zealand, is that a good outcome?
Well, we think certainly it's a good outcome if we can negotiate some settlement outcomes in third countries for some of the people on those islands. We've been saying that for some time. We've been calling for the government to engage with New Zealand on this. But we don't know if it's part of the secret deal that was agreed between Senator Lambie and the government yesterday because they won't tell us. So it remains to be seen whether any progress will be made there.
Is it fair enough, though, for Jackie Lambie to strike an arrangement?
Well, I think Australians have got a right to know what the arrangement is. It's pretty bizarre, really, that you had government cabinet ministers walk into the Senate yesterday and vote for a deal that they didn't know the contents of either. So I think people have got a right to know what deal's been struck here. It's a very important issue. We're talking about people's health and people's lives, and it's not really a time for secret deals and political games.
Obviously, still a lot of attention on Angus Taylor. There is just one more question time. Before Parliament rises for the summer, he has plans to head off to the climate summit in Madrid next week, as I understand it. Some details have emerged about this document that was published in a Sydney newspaper. Do you think at this point the pressure has been alleviated or are there still questions that need to be explained?
I think the pressure on Angus Taylor is increasing. And whether people want to talk about staffers and all that sort of thing, I think Angus Taylor is the issue here. He's the one peddling dodgy documents. He's the one who's been sprung misleading the parliament. He's the one who hasn't been disclosing his private business interests. There are other scandals involving meetings he's had about his private business investments. He even lied in his first speech about his time at Oxford University. So I think the pressure on Angus Taylor is increasing. And the pressure on the Prime Minister too. I think it's a black mark against Scott Morrison. Firstly, that he put a guy like this into the cabinet, and secondly, that he hasn't asked him to stand aside while the police investigate what's going on here.
And if the police investigation clears Angus Taylor and people in his office, is that the end of the matter as far as you're concerned?
Well, my fear about the police investigation is that we've had the Prime Minister and the Attorney General, the first law officer of the land, in the Parliament, trying to influence the outcome of it. I wonder whether Australians can have confidence in the outcome of an investigation that when the Attorney General has already said it's a waste of time.
Are you seriously doubting the ability of the New South Wales Police to conduct the investigation fairly?
No, my issue is with the Attorney General and with the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister made a phone call about the investigation. He said that he talked with the Police Commissioner about the substance of it.
Sure, but it's only pertinent if the investigation's affected, right?
Well, I don't think that the Prime Minister or the Attorney General should have put the police in that position by making an inappropriate phone call and by describing it in the Parliament as a waste of time. I think those were very unfortunate developments. I don't have any issue whatsoever with the police or how they conduct their business professionally. I do have an issue with the Prime Minister and the Attorney General. We've been asking questions about this in the Parliament for the last week or two because we do think it's inappropriate for those senior players in the government to be talking in the way they have about an ongoing police investigation into one of their own cabinet colleagues.
Jim Chalmers, thank you very much.
Thank you, Hamish.